Actually, I was very upset by it, because here we go.
Did somebody
Good evening,
cancel
good
something?
evening, good evening. I know it was just they've now started to do it, and it's a it.
Your show.
It's not like my show tried it once. They tried it once, and as I say, I made my feelings very clear
Got
that
told off
if I
because we used to have a whiskey hustle.
Yeah, which I don't love those. I don't love those either. I don't love those. You know what they are? I'll give you a good. I'll give a good explanation of the how to approach the people going out for whiskey during the Haftarah. It's the parasha from 2 weeks ago. It's Pinchas. It halacha chi ve'ein moirin kein. If somebody does it, you know what? It's not the end of the world. If people enjoy it and they go out during the Haftarah and they have a good, it's not the end of the world. But if somebody asks, can they do it? The answer is no.
Yeah.
And if it becomes, because it becomes very exclusive, it becomes very sort of, you know,
Quadrant.
and we are having, you know, there is a service going on, and that's that.
Exactly what Mistral did.
Right.
Sometimes does. You call it Haftarah as well.
Yeah, and I don't, that to me, that's, I think it's not good. And, you know,
Time and place.
the time and place, but also, I mean, I told you, I've told this story many,
I'm
many
going to
times
just talk
here, but I'm going
about
to tell it again because it's the World Cup, again. So I'll retell the time when I was doing a cheer out in Bushy and surrounding areas. You've heard, I know you've heard the story millions of times, and it was a once every month cheer. That's all it was, the first Wednesday of every month. And it was, and the World Cup came round, and the one of the games, the World Cup, would have been on the first Wednesday of the month. So they said, would it be all right if that week, month we did it the second Wednesday of the month? And my response was, yes, that's absolutely fine, but you'll need to get yourself a new mugged cheer after that, because if the cheer is less important than the World Cup, what are we, you know, what are we doing? And, you know, kavata itim la Torah. Did you set aside times for Torah is the second question that a person is asked in Olam HaEmes. According to the Gemara, it's the second question a person is asked. Second, by the way, right?
No,
No,
you
the
know what
first,
the first
Nosata
is?
Nosata Be'emunah. Did you deal honestly
One
with
thing is
people in
this.
business? In business and in general, your dealings, and that's the first question. And that's really important because we have to remind people that if you don't pass that first question, you're never asked about what you learnt or what Hechri, you don't get to that. Right? I mean, you know, I've told you before, you know, what worries me is an Admeva Essim, we get upstairs and the Malach will be there with a clipboard and we'll go running up to the Malach and we say, oh, I want to tell you all about the wonderful things I did. I did this, 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 this. And the Malach will look at us and he'll say, oh, that's lovely. That's very nice. But I haven't got any of them on my list. Okay. None of those are on my list. And we'll sort of say, oh dear, so maybe I didn't do anything right. And say, no. I've got lots of other things you didn't even know was a chuyos that I've listed. And then we'll come, sorry. And then we'll come to Averis and we'll say, I'm really worried because I did this and this and this and this and this. And the Malach will look and say, no, you're all right. I've got all those down on the clipboard, but they're all marked as just human, right? So that just says normal human. So then we'll say, oh, that's all right. And then I'll say, ah, but I've got a few things you didn't mention, and there are things that weren't that we won't have thought of. But Nosas Be'emunah, it's the first question is did you deal decently? But the second question is Kavata Isumato. Why is it that way? I'll explain. Why is it that way around? I'll explain. Dealing honestly in business with people generally, it's not just about business as in commercial businesses, generally, is not a merit. It's a neutral. We are expected to be honest, not lying. You don't get marks for not lying. you lose marks for life. No, it's very, it's you lose. It's like we talked about the Maharal with the negative mitzvahs and the positive mitzvahs. We talked about this. We've talked about this over the years. I think we talked about it a couple of weeks ago.
Scales as well, wasn't it?
Scales, yeah, scales. But the negative mitzvahs, the Maharal says, are just things to stop you going below basic, decent human. But you don't get any marks for doing those. The positive mitzvahs, the 248 positive mitzvahs, connected the evorim, the limbs, that's where you start to build. That's where you start to gain. And that's the point of these three questions that the Gemara says we're asked, which is a terribly powerful core Torah that really people should say more. So the first question is, did you just manage to tread even, to tread water as a basic, decent human being? Because if you didn't, I've got no further questions. The Malach's got no further questions. If you did, now, kavot itim latoira, now let's examine what you built, what you did positive, what you did extra, how you rose above the level of just a not liar, not cheat, not all these. How did you go the extra mile? And by kavot itim latoira, it doesn't mean Limud Torah only. Limud Torah is part of it, but it means how far did you make Torah a fixed part of your life to enhance. In other words, it's almost poshut, it's almost the Rabbeinu Shlomo saying to a person at the end of their life, okay, what have you got to offer me? What have you done? Neshama shenasatavi, we say every morning, neshama shenasatavi tahirahi. You gave us a blank sheet, so I haven't spoiled it. Lovely, but what have I done with it? If a child, you give out paper in a colouring class, and the child comes back with a blank piece of paper, and says, "Look, I haven't made a mess." Right? You don't get any marks for that. Yeah, you didn't make a mess, but you didn't draw me a picture either. Points of neatness, but he hasn't done anything with it. Nosfas Nosadwemunna is lovely, it's important. I didn't destroy the paper, but I haven't yet written you anything. Kovata Itim Latoira is what did you write on the paper? What did you do? What did you paint on the canvas of the neshama that the Rabbeinu Shlomo gave you? That's pshat.
What I want to know is, where am I going to end up then?
None of us have any doubt, Mike. None of us have any doubt.
Yeah. Right up there.
But you see, the Chofetz Chaim says there are no choices that are difficult to make. So there's no choices. Every choice in life, he says, is easy. What is difficult is noticing that you're making a choice and what choice you're making. So in the situation you face this afternoon, you know, we started all this facetiously by talking about the Kiddush Club, and I said, Halacha Hiva Eimorin Kein. It's an example of something. If you do it, you do it. It's neither good nor bad. But if you start saying shouldn't, no, the answer is you shouldn't. It's bad. But the situation Mike was facing this afternoon with a thief running off, and you know, you've got so many shikul hadas, you've got so many things to balance. I mean, as the first day rises, v'nishmatim me'odis nafshu tzeichet, and Baruch Hashem, you survived the experience, but that, you know, that's the but there were other balances, and it was you were doing a very powerful thing in giving a very powerful message, and the shopkeeper, you were giving a powerful message of chizuk to the shopkeeper, so...
They have a security guy there who stands back and watches.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're there for.
That's the question they were asking. Goyle. The staff were asking.
While we're on this, let's just complete the thought, and then we'll bring it back to the parasha and to the time of year. But let's just complete the thought with the third question that a person is asked, which is Sipisa li Yeshua. Did you wait for salvation? Were you waiting for, were you expecting, were you hoping for salvation? And the And the answer, the point of that is, as well as doing things that are good in this in a human sense and are good in a Torah sense, a person needs an overall direction. You need to be traveling because your choices become easier and easier if you have a principle-based lifestyle to check them off against. It is what I'm doing, you know, Mike, your overarching impulse that you're describing this afternoon is you believe in standing up for what's right. And this is wrong. This was wrong. And you believe in protecting weak people.
Absolutely.
And these are easy, you know, these are the Yeshua, your concept of what makes a better world is built on principles like this. And that's what you're checking your impulses against. And that's what you know, back to, you know, where we started with this, if you ask, you know, how many things does having a little cozy club of people who go out in the middle of a service to drink whiskey during the Haftarah, how many bad impressions does that give? But on a human level, it can be very socially exclusive. It can be actually partly designed to make the you are in it, you aren't in it, which is not very nice. It can embarrass people. But also, it gives a very dangerous signal to our youth. You know, the concept that, and okay, I'm not saying that you can't wait, that these people can't wait for, but what signal does it give to the youth about their relationship with alcohol, which is one of the biggest problems affecting the community today? Relationship with alcoholism and gambling, those are the two biggest social evils that are affecting not just our community, but they're affecting young people all over. And you remember, we've discussed this before, that Reb Moshe Feinstein, Olav HaSholem, in the Igros Moshe, is asked about marijuana, the halachos of marijuana, and he gives five reasons against taking it, why it's also to take marijuana. And I'm going to mention two of them in the context of this discussion. The first that he gives that's relevant here is he says, we say three times a day, Atah Chayin La'odem Das. Our mind is our most precious commodity, that the Rabboni Shalom gave us a mind. And to Chas V'Sholem, to do something that deliberately relinquishes my control over my mind is literally handing back the piece of paper to the teacher, saying, I don't want to draw anything on the it's a dereliction of the response of accepting the neshama. It's saying, you keep the neshama. I don't want it anymore. I don't want it for the next half an hour. And again, alcohol is slightly, it is different from marijuana. Yain is samach levav enosh, we said yesterday, Rosh Chodesh, we said Baruch Hinafshi. Yes, the Torah has told us to get a pleasure from alcohol is a good thing. Yain is samach levav enosh. But I must be in charge, in control. And the idea that I can't wait an hour till Kiddush, I know that may not be what's actually in people's mind, but that could be what's perceived, and that's a dangerous thing. The second point is this, the second of the Isurim that Reb Moshe mentions is this. He says, Kibud Av V'Em, honoring your parents, is a mitzvah that's given for a very good reason. Leman harachta yomim, right? So that you'll have the Torah says, Leman harachta yomim, so that your days will be lengthened. What's pshat? He says, your parents know more than you do. They've been around for longer than you, and they have your best interests at heart. And the fact that parents will say, I don't want you taking marijuana, even if they can't give you a good reason, a reason that you regard as good, is neither here nor there. The respect for your parents should mean that just them saying, I'm not sure I can't tell you the medicine, we don't know enough about the long-term effects, and but don't do it. That should be enough. Now, if the parents can't show the children self-control, how do you expect the children to turn to the parents' generation and take that seriously? And the kind of, you know, they can't wait till the end of davening is not a nice look. And what does that damage? It damages the authority of the parents. So I'm sorry, I can't help it. There we are. Halacha hiva ein moed, Keynes. I say, so long as nobody asks me, it's fine.
Mike
it's not the worst thing. Sorry.
Mike is in charge of whiskey at the kiddies.
I know.
So am I. Yes.
I know all about it. We used to have, do any of you remember? You probably do. He was a lovely fellow called Herbert Goldsmith. Herbert Goldsmith, he was a stalwart of the Ajax, which is why you might remember him. He was a teetotaler. Yeah. And he was in charge of the Kiddushim, and he handed out the drinks at the Kiddushim in Dunstan Road. And we used to, he was a lovely, fantastic fellow, Oliver Sholem. He's a wonderful man. But he was quite funny because he really didn't approve of people drinking at all. So he'd stand by and he'd hand out these tiny and really tiny, and it'd be quickly, further down the sukkah, please, further down the Kiddush. And he'd move people. The other thing, he once, one of our friends once, he was also, I mean, he was very, very communally minded, fantastic. He got the neighborhood watch going. And so one day, one of our friends got a knock on the door. So she looked through the glass and she could see it was Herbert Goldsmith. So she knows who he is. So she opens the door and says, hello, good evening. You shouldn't have opened the door, he said. It's dangerous. She said, well, don't knock. Why do you knock on the door? So there we are. Just on this, circling back towards Devorim, what I said about the clipboard and the things that we don't recognize, the armitzes, the armitzes, the arvos, the antavos, and the things we've been talking about this evening, that's pshat in what we may come to in a couple of weeks' time, but I mention it now because it's pshat in v'hoyo ekev tishmur. You remember when it says, if you keep. But the word akev is a very difficult word. And you remember the Rashi brings from ikuv, the heel. And it says these are the mitzvahs that a person, they're the mitzvahs katanis, the small mitzvahs that a person spurns with the heel, tramples on with the heel. So the question is, what does it mean, small mitzvahs? Small mitzvahs, and this is what it's talking about. It's things that aren't the Tariq mitzvahs. It's not Shachris Mincha Maariv. It's not Tfilin. It's not Kashrus. It's things that you wouldn't naturally know unless you're looking for them. And that's the Ekev Tishmon. It's that you should be looking out for opportunities for good and dangers, risks for bad. And that's Ekev Tishmon. That's shouting what's going on there. Right. Any questions so far apart from Mike? We know what Mike thinks about Mike. I haven't given a psak. I never get your rabbi's here, so I'm even less likely to give a psak. And I never do, as you know. I'm always careful. I've been very careful over the years that none of you should learn my opinion on anything. So, you know, I keep my opinions to myself.
What goes on at Westminster Station, Westminster?
Yeah. Eila hadvorim asher dibe Moshe el kol Yisrael be'eva hayardin. These are the things that Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to Bnei Yisrael when they crossed when they came to the Ibur hayardin, when they came to the east of the Yarden, so not they hadn't yet crossed. And Pasuk Gimel. He started talking like the things that Hashem had said to him. Now, I thought, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought we'd recently been hearing quite a lot from Greenberg about how Moshe Rabbeinu was such a clear prophet, pe'el pe'adabe boy, that what went into his, it went and out of Hashem's mouth came out. So what's pshat here, suddenly, we're getting k'choil asher tziva. He's teaching like Hashem said. I thought the whole point of Moshe Rabbeinu was he teaches exactly what. Posuk hey, be'eve ayadim be'eretz moyov, ha'il Moshe be'eretz ha'tora zois le'moyov. In the east of the Yarden, To explain this Torah. Again, what's Moshe Rabbein doing explaining? I thought he was teaching. Moshe Rabbein. So Rashi says on Hayu Moshe Beyer es HaTorah Zois. What does it mean? Says Rashi, it means from the Medrash, Beshivim Loshein. He taught them the Torah in 70 languages. This wasn't a drush. It wasn't an elaboration or a tapestry, an embroidery, but it was a translation into 70 different languages. What's pshat? The pshat is quite simple. We're getting ready to come into Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is occupied by 70 nations. Okay, but we're going to get rid of the 70 nations. We're going to supplant them. That's the whole point. Well, firstly, we actually never do, which, by the way, I do not believe is entirely in any sense coincidental. I think it is all predictable and intended. But more to the point, supplanting doesn't mean eradicating all aspects of a nation's culture. You come and live in a place, you absorb its language, you absorb its food, you absorb it. Until then, we'd kept our own language, food, and clothing, and that was one of the zechuyos that kept us out, that got us out of Mitzrayim, because we hadn't assimilated. But now we're going to be building for ourselves, and we have the ability to bring within the Torah aspects of the surrounding culture, including language, which you're looking very perturbed at this, but this is why Toitophos comes in, Parshas, in Sefer Devarim. What are Toitophos? Says Rashi, don't worry, it's an ancient Persian word. What's an ancient Persian word doing to describe an essential mitzvah of the Torah? Answer, you need to do tefillin now, so learn techniques of local leather craft, of local, and absorb them and adopt them and adapt them. So this is quite an interesting, integrate them into our Torah, into our Kavata Itim La Torah, but not integrating into them. That's the opposite.
It's to be an example to all of these 70 nations of how to live their lives.
I think that's right, Mike. It's when we talk about Oyer Lagoy, it doesn't mean it. And I'll give you, I'll settle those of you who are looking worried. I'll settle you with a clear proof in a second. It does not mean proselytize. It means use the light of Torah to light up their ways of doing, to integrate Torah into their ways of doing. And what's the proof of that is Rosh Hashanah is coming very, very fast. And we say, V'haviyosem ha'akodji, ki vesi ves tefillah yikore l'cholo amin. We have all these 70 nations coming to the Beis HaMikdosh, and they come to us. But they're still 70 nations. They're still them, but lit up with the oil lagoim, lit up with the oil of Torah. I mean, I've told you this before, but I'll say it again because I think it's a vort that cannot be said too often, if I may say so. It's relating to something we said before, again, about the order of the question. I'll remind you of this halacha. The halacha is the first oil that comes from the olive before the skin is broken is used ner lamo'ol. The Pasuk says that's used for the menorah. Once the skin is broken, the second, I don't know what they would call it in supermarket terms, whether that's ultra virgin, I don't know what that counts as, but whatever counts, the halachic requirement is that the skin has not broken. It's what we call, I think in halachic, I think there's a phrase, I think it's called the sweat of the olive, what comes out with pressure. Yeah? What the first, which is still probably virgin olive oil by whatever they mean it in the supermarkets, the skin is broken, but only a little. And so there'll be tiny shamorim, tiny sediment. That oil is used for the minchois, for the flower offering. Now that is totally counterintuitive. I never know whether I'm pleased or unpleased when I tell a thought that I know I've told you about a million times before, when you're still looking as though you're following it. Either means that you don't remember, I'm not very good at telling them, or it means that you're very generous spirited and you can still manage to look interested. I shall assume the latter, Kol Hashem. Then the Malach will say, Andy, you were Don Lechav Sechus. I got that on my clipboard. You can come in. But it's counterintuitive, because if I put oil that's got sediment in it into the menorah, the sediment drops to the bottom, so it doesn't affect the light at all. The wick absorbs the oil, and it makes no difference to the light at all. Whereas if I add oil to the menachos, to the mincha offering, and it's got sediment, that will change the texture. Any little, it's gritty, it will change the texture of the mincha. So it is counterintuitive. But it's a very powerful message. The mincha is kavot itim la Torah territory. It's mitzvahs, it's Torah, and it's between me and the Rabbeinu Shalom. And the Rabbeinu Shalom really doesn't mind. Like I said, and I'm not joking, it's human, right? Humans have sediment, and the Malach will look at it and say, "That's fine. That was human. That I mean this very, very seriously." That's shemorim. The Rabbeinu Shalom does not mind a few shemorim in the mincha because it proves that we're human. But the menorah is the oil agoyim. That's the message that we are promulgating to the world as Jews. And then it must be 100% pure. It doesn't matter that the shemorim would or wouldn't affect. There must be no shemorim, whether or not they'd affect the light. Because that light, we are taking responsibility on ourselves to promulgate a divine message, and that message cannot be interfered with one crumb. So again, in that case, why suddenly is Moshe Rabbeinu kachoy lashed sivah? Why is he embroidering? Yeah. So the point is this. The Be'ed Moshe, Hoya Moshe Be'ed Satoir Azais, Moshe Rabbeinu began to expound it in 70 different languages. What that means is Moshe Rabbeinu said over in Devarim, Moshe Rabbeinu is saying over the Torah in ways that will work in all the different contexts that Bnei Yisrael find themselves in once they have gone me'evel liyad, and once they've crossed the yad and they've entered Eretz Yisrael, whether they are in commerce, whether they're in agriculture, whether they're in service, in whatever, whether they're living in this kind of land, in that kind of land, whatever, it needs to be right for their circumstances and their contexts. That is pshat in kerchoil asher tziva asher oisa aleim. Hold on, give me one second, Mike. That's pshat that once you translate, there is no such thing as a real translation. There's no such thing as a translation that doesn't have any nuance, because that's what language is. It gives nuance. So it isn't that Moshe Rabbeinu started to embroider from his own intellect, peo peo dabe boy, absolutely. What it is that from that moment on, the Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching the Torah, the same mitzvah, 70 different ways for 70 different contexts. That's kuchel, and none of those will be identical. They're all Torah. I'll let you both in half a second. They're all Torah, but they all look different. And the point, this is why I want to just finish the point, because this is how we have to understand my minhag about food on Shabbos is this, your minhag is that, my approach to the 9 days, the Sephardim traditionally were very strong on Shavua Shechal Boy Tisha B'Av, the week of Tisha B'Av, the Ashkenazi tradition is more focused on Meirosh Chodesh onwards, the 9 days. But this is Kechol Asher Tziva. These are, it's not, one is not better, one is not different. These are absolutely Elu ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chayim. These are all the words of the living God, but they are words in a different language. And that's how I like to see the understanding of different minhagim, is we are translating the divine Torah into different languages. Okay, you've been very patient. We've got three questions.
The point I wanted to make.
Yeah, come on.
There is no human being alive or has ever been alive that knows 70 languages.
Yeah.
And so it had to come for Hashem.
That's a very good point, if I may say. So yeah, I agree with that. That's very good. I like that. Yeah, I like that. I mean, again, not really against that, but just sort of balancing that. The Rebbeinu Shalom did do this. Yeah, the Sefer Devarim is called Mishneh Torah, the repetition of Torah. And the word Mishneh, it means repetition from the word Sheni, but it also has the root. It does come to mean it's one of the most interesting words. You know, we always look at the two-letter roots when we talk here. It's one of the most interesting words in the Hebrew language in terms of two-letter roots, because sheni means to repeat. There's also, it comes to mean, as in Mishnah, it comes to mean to teach. But of course, there's also shinui, a difference, right? Shinui. I mean, Shane means a tooth. And you can knit all of these together. You cannot repeat without some difference. There will be some change. You cannot translate without some difference. So there's a Shani and Shinui. You cannot teach without repetition in because you have to teach four different people in different ways. And the idea of the tooth, you are giving it found. You're giving it sort of implementation. You're giving it. We talk even in English. We talk about giving something teeth. You're giving it real practical implementation, and that's all in this word, Shane. It's all in this word to be Mishane the Torah. So it means all those things. So the Mishneh Torah is a repetition by Moshe Rabbeinu of things we've already been told. It does have, it has some influence. No, let me say this carefully. It has some of Moshe Rabbeinu in it, but Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't put it there. It's a vision coming through Moshe Rabbeinu, and it's still pe'el peh, but it is. It is more human. It is a more human repetition designed at different levels to work. Me'evelayarde. I think who was next?
Yeah. Like you said, it originally was Pe'el Pe'er, which was from what Hashem said to him. He gave direct to the people, but this side he added the human element into it. And I think Shlomo Melech spoke to that.
I think that's right. Shlomo Melech. I mean, I'll tell you something. I'm Maurice Sarchi and I were having a discussion last week, as we used to, about his whole thing about Job being written by a manic depressive, which is, and I reminded him of this. I said, I still don't know whether that's true or not. I mean, it's an interesting theory, but I'll tell you, I said, one thing that is true, Koheles was definitely written in a state of psychedelic trance. And when you think about this, when you think about Shlomo HaMelech as in some kind of psychedelic, I'll tell you why it's so important, because the Mefarshim have spent over the years. They say, you know, always says one pasuk. He says I said, joy is great. And the next day, Sukhoik is the worst thing in the world. And so they, you know, the doors are, well, here it is. You know the best explanation? He's high. He's round. He's, you know, it's abs. Wow. And it doesn't mean on something they wouldn't have been marijuana. But his hands, he's in a psychedelic state. And truth, he's not. It isn't a lecture. It's not a philosophical lecture. Truth is a he's looking at things from different sides, and in one minute, he's like, I love laughter. Oh, you've got to be careful of laughter. It's not which he means. He means both in different ways. Which, by the way, sorry, but I'm digressing from the digression, but as so often, it gives a lot of meaning to that passage that we all say, it reverses the meaning of the passage in Kohelis, where, you know, it says a time for this and a time for that. And so we say a time to laugh and a time to mourn. Shlomo HaMelech is not saying there are two different times. Now we're going to laugh and now we're going to mourn. He's saying, and it makes so much more sense if you read it like this. He's saying, Eis lirkoid is Eis lispoid. The time to be, you have to do, you have the in order to gain the most from the world, you have to be in control of all your emotions at the same time, and you have to be deploying your emotions at the same time. And it isn't, now is a time for unbridled fun, and know that now is the time for unbridled sorrow. When a person is mourning, they have to count their brachas. When a person is rejoicing, they have to think, they have to be aware of where it's come from, and they have to look at it rationally. We have to remain rational human beings that look at things in the round. Makes much more sense. Yes.
My favorite question. Why 70 languages in the first place?
Yes, yeah, so 70 is it's a paradigmatic number. It's just a figurative. It's a symbolic number used for a lot of different you know, rabbinic symbolisms. The Shivim Ponim LaTorah, the 70 facets of the Torah, the 70 nations, the 70 languages. I can't reel you off more, but it's there are loads and loads. I think that the sort of the imagery comes from stone cutting, from diamond cutting. Uh-huh. I think it's the site, because facets, you know, if you imagine a sort of 70 faceted diamond would be very, very hard to imagine, but the complexity with which it would diffuse the light would be very, very extreme. And it would be, I think that's what the that's sort of what the imagery. And this is I'm purely speculating. This is my guess on how we started thinking about 70 as a sort of complicated kind of.
Nothing to do with Migdal and Babel.
Yeah, but where does that come from? That's the point. That's the point.
Okay.
Yeah.
In the desert. So why speak to them in 70 languages?
Because they're going into 70 host nations.
Five or six. Jebusites,
those are the ones we have the mitzvah to conquer in the first Kibush Haaretz. Right. But there are Shivim Umos, there are 70 nations living there, right. And we have to be able to deal with them in 70 different languages.
It's a lot of learning going on.
But it's also very important because, you know, Kibush Haaretz, the conquest. And this is very important today when we have, unhappily, we've got Jewish fascists in Israel going around talking fascist language about, you know, kill the Arabs, and the Arabs aren't human. You know, it's very important to gain a more complex understanding of what Kibush HaOretz was. And let me just, I'm not going to go into it now because I want to get back to something else, but let me just pose this question based on what you say, that it was very important. Why would we learn 70 languages? Why would Moshe Rabbeinu, according to Rashi, teach us Torah in 70 languages if we were going to wipe them all out instantly?
We weren't going to.
We're not going to wipe them out. We're going, yeah, there are aspects of kibbush, there is real conquest, but as the Rambam lays out in Hilchos Melachim very clearly, there is always, we weren't going anywhere, we were conquering that land, but we weren't, with the one exception of Amalek, and Amalek is again is a paradigm, it's did it exist, does it, what does it mean, that's for another time. Yeah, with that one exception, we weren't killing anybody who wasn't fighting us.
No.
It's very important.
Yeah.
Right, very briefly. I'm glad they're having it.
What you've just said is another 2 hour fear, you know that.
Well, I'm not going anywhere. I'm hungry. But it's always bad news when I've got my case. It means I haven't had supper. So it's always bad news. Okay. I'm a bit wondering about this, but I think, you know what? I think it's lovely that the children are having music and a 9-day music thing. I genuinely do. I think the children these days, they're under such pressure. They're living under such pressure. And you know, things are very different, and you have to contextualize. You know, people now, you have to contextualize halacha, and you have to think to yourself, how would people say it now? And when my children were young, the school holidays were very often when you went away. It was very often the 9 days. Yes. And I was very, very, I use the word carefully, I was very strict that they were to go in the sea or during the 9 days. I was very makpid, I was very particular that they should go in the swimming in the 9 days, because that's their opportunity. And what, you know, what rabbi in the medieval times or in whenever's writing or not, knowing about school holidays today would say, oh, the children, it's a different world. And you've got to contextualize what would the and these, you know, these children, they need everything they can get. They need everything they can get. Right. But we don't. Always. We need something.
So just one
yeah.
Little thing. So we came from the east into Israel.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
But we went north first on east, yeah. And then turned left.
I'm not. I can't do geography. I can't help you. I don't know what's the point.
From Egypt, either they went.
Well, we know they did a doubling back.
Yes, but did they go south?
Oh, I can't. I don't.
Know. Right, from Eilat.
Look at put it in Google Maps. Put it in Google Maps and then say what's the.
Jericho.
Yeah, put type into Google Maps going via Yericho. You know, I don't know. I don't know. I can't help you. I can't help you. Right, Chazon Yeshayahu Venomot. Right, the Chazon, the vision. Asher Chazon Al Yehuda. I would say the nigun of the Haftorah for Chazoin is almost worth missing one's whiskey for. I'm not going to, you know me, I never miss a chance to make a foul blow to give it.
Just hit me in the,
yeah.
In the muggin.
It's an incredibly moving niggun. And it's really, really interesting. Why we never allow ourselves to mourn on Shabbos. I don't know what they do here, but Rabbi Cooper, Olav HaSholem, was so clear, you don't use mournful tunes on Shabbos, that one year when the Chazan in Lucha Doidi started using the Rabbi Cooper went to the Omud and stopped him in mid-davening. Now, by the way, you will all be saying to me, hold on, Rabbi Cooper would have done that. Rabbi Cooper, who I thought we said the principles converse, and surely the first thing that he would have been not to want to embarrass somebody, which is correct. Rabbi Cooper would have run a mile from being mavayish somebody. So the important thing to tell you about this is, before the davening, the person was told not to do it. And therefore, it becomes this person chose to disregard the halacha that he'd been told. So he's made it public that he is publicly flouting the minag of the shul, minag Yisrael Torah, and that's why Rabbi Cooper intervened. If it had been a mistake, Rabbi Cooper would never have intervened. And this came about in the first year of our new shul. A certain rabbi was in shul, and we had told the Baal Tefillah not to use a mournful tune, and he did. But he did. But and he did. No, and he didn't. And the rabbi, a certain rabbi who was there, that's right. We told him not to, so he didn't. A certain rabbi who was there, who was very strong that the minhag was to use the mournful tune, went up to the Baal Tefillah as halfway through the Chodaydi and said, you should be using this thing. So I went over to this rabbi afterwards, and I don't always pull my punches, although I never let any of you know my opinions. I don't mind telling rabbis to share them. And I said to him, but he went up to the Baal Tefillah in the middle of, and he said, "Minag Yisrael Torah." I said, "Yeah, but to be mavayish a person in the shul is literally it's a deraisa. You're being mavayish." And he said, "Oh, I heard Rabbi Cooper once said." I said, "Well, you heard wrong. Rabbi Cooper did it because the person was going against what he, here the person's doing what he had been told, and you went
story."
Half the story, it's like the Reb Moshe Feinstein with the milk. Do you remember the milk with the carton? You know the story? Reb Moshe Feinstein, Lavashom, is at a Malava Malka, and he's seen to pick up a packet of milk, look at it very carefully, check the Heksher, put it down, and choose a different Heksher milk that's in front of him. And within minutes, the story is all around New York. Reb Moshe doesn't trust this Heksher. So finally, and the fellow's, his business is out. Nobody's buying his milk. So finally, somebody, instead of talking about him, actually talks to him and says, "Reb Moshe didn't drink your milk." So he goes running to Reb Moshe. What, you know, we'll do whatever, our business is gone. Yeah. What's pshat? Reb Moshe says, "You don't trust our milk." Reb Moshe says, "What are you talking about? I don't trust your milk." Everybody says, "You picked up a carton of my milk at the Malava Malka, you checked whose it was, and you put it down again." Reb Moshe says, "It was empty." He says it was empty. But people tell half, in this case, it's half a story. And they'll ruin a person's whole livelihood because they don't bother to ask them, what's the story? So what's pshat that we're using the nigun of Chazayin? What's pshat we're using that nigun on Shabbos for the Haftorah if we don't use mournful tunes on Shabbos? And as I say, is the halacha is in many places. I don't know what the minhag is here.
Can I ask a personal question?
Yeah.
Do you have Torah, Petition Rav, which is next Thursday?
Yes.
Wednesday or Thursday.
Asoif asifa imnu mashem.
Do it in a normal niggun.
So.
Because I shall be doing it.
Yeah. So.
And you know the normal niggun.
Okay, so the first thing is to tell you, I think it is on my website. Yeah. I've got a nigunim. There's a set of nigunim. I don't think the Haftorah for Asof Asifem is on, but the Haftorah for Chazoin, which is the same nigun, is.
Right.
So if you wanted, you've got time to learn it.
No, that's
okay.
Brother's
Yorkshire. So you particularly want to do
the normal tune that I know.
Yeah.
And the moment is picking up on it. In this hall.
And yacht sites are really precious thing, and you
Yeah.
want to do, you want to
Definitely.
do the you want to do it, you want stuff to.
And the only one who is able to do it
The Nigun.
is another.
Could you learn the other Nigun in a year?
Possibly not in a week.
So do it normal this year, but think seriously. Blineda, I'll put it on my website, Blineda, and maybe remind me if it isn't there. Think about learning it for next year. It's not difficult.
Okay.
It's not difficult. Of course you can. Of course it's. I've told you it's not. The heavens is not going to fall. But in terms of Hiddur Mitzvah, in terms, it's a very beautiful thing to be able to do. It's a lovely nigun. It's a lovely. It's such a soulful melody that I think it'd be nice. Maybe think of, so. Do it this year as you've always done it, and maybe think about next year. Blineda, you've got 52 weeks to learn. You all remember the psak I gave during, again, I don't give psak halachas, you know, but I did during you know the psak I gave during COVID to the shul that wants to know if a woman could blow shofar for them because they could, right? You remember they could only get a woman, their normal Baal Tzkiah couldn't come, but the woman could come. And I said to them, yes, on one condition. They were all thinking, oh, you know, she put six bags over her head or whatever it's going to be, or hold a sefer Torah, whatever it's going to be. So the condition is you ask her next year as well. She's not a Shabbos goy, and she's not a B'dieved. She's a human being, and if she can do it this year, she can do it next year.
She's not a
After
perfect
that, if
term.
you want to go back to the minhag of having a man blow, fine, but you know, make the point. So I'm it's slightly different, but I'm saying to you this year, do it. But think about being mahadim, and you know what? You'll try, and if it doesn't work, so at least you'll know you've done the kveid hatzibur of going to the effort of trying to learn it. That's what I would say.
What you said though about
Yeah.
the carton of milk in Gemara as well, it says about a man coming out of a house where murder holding a bloody axe,
Yeah.
you mustn't shout.
Correct. Correct. Because you don't know. You don't know. So what I want to say is this. Pshatin, why do we allow this this mournful tune on Shabbos Chazon, when we don't allow mournful melodies for the rest of the davening, and we're very makpid, some more than others, but there is this idea that you don't do avelus on Shabbos. So it sort of takes us back to the point I was making about what Kehelis is saying about Eis Lispoid, whatever it is, I don't remember exactly the couplets, but you all know what you all know the different couplets. It takes us back to that. It is true that there's no public mourning on Shabbos. Shabbos is a time of joy and simcha and oneg, and a person mustn't do ostentatious public mourning on Shabbos. So when you've got a tune and you're meant to be singing and it's meant to be a tune, it's meant to be a happy, pleasant tune, we don't subvert that. It's a luchadoidi, it doesn't have to be hoppity hoppity all the time, but it's meant to be a pleasant tune. And we don't use something that's not, but we're always conscious that, you know, everything's time for everything at the same time. There's a little bit, you know, our like we break the glass under the chuppah to show that there's, you know, that there wouldn't actually be real simcha. Requires a person to have a bit of perspective as well. If a person doesn't acknowledge that, you know, it's like I hate the phrase. Only we should only meet on simchas. It really annoys me. Only simchas. It's nonsense. The world is not only simchas. And a person who forgets in a simcha that there's another side to the world is actually, it's not, that's not real simcha. That's Shlomo HaMelech saying they've just gone mad. It's just they're drunk with pleasure. That's not simchas. That's not simchas emes. Simchas emes, true simcha, has an element of reminding us that not everybody has everything. Compassion. It has empathy within it, and that's the reason for the once a year we use. It's not public mourning. It's this one time in the year when we allow the realities of the world to express themselves through our laning, through our nigunim of laning. And it's not a song. It's not, the Haftarah isn't a let's all dance around the shul like the Chododi is, right? I'm assuming you all dance around the shul during the Chododi. I'm assuming that.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
We haven't done that recently.
No, because Baruch Hashem, you're not like these mad shuls that have started drinking whiskey. I dare say they do dance around
they've had a few drinks, that's
they had a few
what.
drinks, this is not, which again is not. But the nigun for the Haftorah, it is mournful in a soulful sense. It speaks to, and this is why I do love it so much, which is why I think it's good to keep it in mind. It really speaks to that yearning. It's more, I would call it more a yearning melody than a mourning melody. And what does yearning remind us? That the third question we're asked in Olam HaEmes is, were you yearning for something better? Were you yearning to make the world a better place? And that has to be, as we go into Tisha B'Av, that has to be the way we're mourning. It's not despair. It's not everything's gone and it's never coming back. It's a yearning for couldn't we do better? Shouldn't we do better? Can't we do better? And that's the nigun. That's the nigun of Asoif Asifa. I shall be very beautiful the way you do it as well. But there's something there. That we're taking into Tisha B'Av, a yearning, a tzipis l'shua, an acknowledgement that in the sitting amidst the shards of ruin, appreciation of ruin is our source of hope, that we know what we've lost and we can do better. And that's compatible with Shabbos because ultimately, what are we yearning for? L'yom shekulei Shabbos, the le'osid lovoi. The world that will be Kulei Shabbos, and that what nigun will they use for Haftorah, the Yom Shekulei Shabbos, I don't know, but it could maybe there'll be a third nigun that will be on the subject of which, just before we finish, I will tell you one of my wife's beautiful vorts that fits with this, but it also fits with something we said before about the 70 nations. When we went to Eretz Yisrael, we went to the shul in Bet Shemesh. We went for the first time. It's an American shul. And we heard them singing their nigunim. And we heard a lot of them are very like ours, but subtly different. And suddenly I realized what had happened. Their harmonies, they do the avorachamim, but not quite. They do it like a harmony. So I realized what happened. Two brothers went from wherever, and one ended up in England, and one ended up in America, and they'd been used to singing, harmonizing in shul. So I'm singing this, and that's how it happens. So my wife said a beautiful vort. She said, "So that means, finally, when we get kibbutz galuyos, when we get everybody comes together from everywhere, for the first time, we'll hear the full tune." Because we'll hear all the harmonies and all the melodies. And that's shut again the 70 nations. We want to keep the 70 perspectives on the Torah because we want to hear the full tune. And we'll only hear the full tune when we hear and see all these things. So the answer is the Haftorah maybe will be a beautiful blend of both nigunim. And that will be. So with that in mind, Im Yetzer Hashem, we'll all sit down well, Tisha B'Av, and we'll rise even better.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody online.